Welcome to Rings of Power Reactions. I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle-earth wanderer. Here you'll find reviews, reactions, and deep dives into the lore behind Amazon Prime's Rings of Power. To go deeper, come wander with me on my main podcast, Lore of the Rings. Visit ringspodcast.com or find Lore of the Rings on your favorite podcast player. Now, let's wander Rings of Power. Every holiday season, we gather around the stories that matter, stories that endure. And what better way to carry those stories with you than with a ring inspired by Tolkien's Legendarium? Manly Bands has created the official Lord of the Rings collection, each piece designed with the care and detail you'd expect from a world that has shaped our imaginations for generations. I wear the Aragorn ring. It reminds me daily of strength, hope, and timeless courage. To find your exclusive discount code for 25% off your Manly Band, visit ringspodcast.com and tap the gold bar at the top. This holiday, give something that lasts longer than a season. That's ringspodcast.com and tap the gold bar. The greatest battle. The greatest romance. The greatest deception. The greatest smithying. The greatest of great greats that were ever greated. Yes, today will be another critical episode, my fellow wanderer. Today we will explore and review Episode 7, Doomed to Die, from Rings of Power Season 2. And surprise, surprise, I am not a fan of this episode. But if Rings of Power is inspiring you to pick up and read Tolkien, then welcome! I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth and all the works and world of J.R.R. Tolkien. I raise my Dr. Pepper to thank this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to financially support the Lore of the Rings podcast, then visit ringspodcast.com/donate. If you're not ready for that, then support the show by sharing this episode with a friend or opening your podcast player and leaving a 5-star rating and review. Now, let's wander. In this Rings of Power episode, Celebrimbor succeeds in crafting the Nine Rings, but finally figures out that Annatar is not a good guy. Adar and his army attack the city at Eregion. The dwarves do nothing, Galadriel does nothing, and Elrond basically doesn't do anything productive either. So let's start with the Siege of Eregion. Celebrimbor wakes up to a peaceful morning in Eregion. And finally we get a few shots of the so-called greatest elven smith actually doing some crafting. He creates one ring, just one, that's all we get. But reality is starting to come in. The gem on Feanor's hammer appears to be fallen or misplaced, and he has to get on the ground and look for it. He also sees his weary expression in the mirror. He looks rather crestfallen and tired. But when Annatar comes in, he says, these past weeks, is his perception of time being warped? Because the attack is still happening, and I don't think it's actually been weeks between episodes. In fact, I think somewhere they say like 4 days or something like that. But there's a nice wide shot of the battle that is still raging on actually outside. But the city seems so empty. There's only like 2 or 3 people running around. And the gate is literally wide open without any defenders. Why is Myrdania asking for orders? She is like a jewel craftsman, isn't she not? She is not a military commander, or are we supposed to believe that she is? I'm not exactly sure there. Somebody mentions that they are not alone, simply as a callback to Éomer at the top of the hill at the end of Helm's Deep. This will be the first of many parallels between this battle and Helm's Deep, but just as with so many other things in this show, these moments will be unearned, not set up, reliant on luck, and portrayed in the dumbest way possible. The orcs begin to turn the trebuchets, and if you look closely, there's like one orc trying to lift it up, but it's pretty much not contributing anything. And besides, these huge catapults are extremely heavy. I think they'd need at least twice as many orcs on those things just to turn them. And it so happens that the orcs are so lucky that a huge rock pinnacle was being held up by a precariously tipped boulder, and that they were able to get at least one hit near that boulder that causes the pinnacle and the whole mountain to fall. Well, what was their plan if that didn't work? This is a great example of Deus Ex Machina. Stuff just happens because the writers deem it so, without any actual setup in the story. It would have been really amazing if we had seen orcs up in the mountain, pounding spikes or rigging chains or doing something, where we don't know what they're doing at first, but later on we have this giant payoff of the attempted landslide. But at least it's consistent with Adar's battle strategies. He uses the natural world around him to his strategic advantage. Eregion looks beautiful, but it appears to have very little damage after being under assault for at least one whole night. But Arondir shows up, so you know some great fighting is about to happen, and then he promptly disappears for most of the episode. Alright, let's move on to the dwarves in Khazad-dûm. While the doors of Durin had been crafted, it doesn't look like they've been installed yet. Narvi hands a letter to the king, asking for aid from the elves. But I was struck by something here when Narvi said that there was an elf at the West Gate. Remember when Gandalf takes the Fellowship into Moria, going in through the West Gate? He says it's a 3-day journey to the other side. We don't know exactly where this conversation in Rings of Power takes place, but let's assume that King Durin is in the middle of Khazad Dûm. That would require a really fast messenger to run from the West Gate to the throne room in less than a day and a half. Not to mention all the time needed to get the message to the West Gate to begin with. How long have the orcs been pelting Eregion? Only a couple of days, as the visuals suggest, or has it really been weeks, as Celebrimbor feels? If weeks, then the elves put up no resistance that whole time, plus most of the entire city is still intact? And also, Durin and Disa are still holding up the mine for all that time? Like the dwarves didn't try again to open the mine after the bats flew over them? Something's not quite adding up here for the timing and character actions. Durin and Disa have literally just been standing there this whole time, just the two of them holding back all of the dwarves of Khazad Dûm, and they're just waiting for the miners to return? Who's taking care of their kids? I thought they had two kids. But they're in luck, because Narvi mutinies from the king to be on Prince Durin's side. And Elrond is back. Hooray! Somehow he's got into Lindon and back to Khazad Dûm in just a couple of days. Good thing he didn't have to pass through the Barrow Downs again. Elrond says that thousands of lives are at stake, but he doesn't even, like, set it up. We don't see the thousands of lives. We're just told that there's thousands of lives, because in Eregion, all we see are, like, 50 archers. And I would have assumed that they would have had a more impressive defense than that. Anyway, let's go back to the battle, where Myrdania is just, she's just in the know, man. She knows everything that's going on. It's incredible. She's hanging out with the archers, although she has no armor on, not even a costume change, except she does have, like, one tiny little wrist guard on, so, you know, in case she needs to pick up a bow sometime. Anyway, she is the main source of information for the commander. She knows that the orcs have, quote, a Ravager. In the subtitles, it has a capital R for Ravager. I have never heard of a Ravager before, have you? Battering ram? Sure. Catapult? Yep. But a Ravager? But apparently the other elves know what that is, as the commander orders it to be stopped. He doesn't even look. We don't even see, like, any realization or fear on his face. He just walks over and says, "That machine must be stopped." And yet they can't stop the 10 orcs from pushing it forward. Later on in the episode, we see them using some oil-filled bags and flaming arrows as fireworks over the orcs to burn them. Why not use that tactic with the Ravager? Probably would have been a lot more effective. Oh, and have you forgotten Annatar? Yeah, he said he was taking over command, but all he's done is really issue one command. Prepare for ground assault. Oh, that sounds a lot like Star Wars to me, Empire Strikes Back. And the elves didn't even obey that order until the river clogged up, and they prepared themselves for ground assault. So what good is Annatar here? And why is Myrdania still so involved? There's just no explanation, except that she's a character with a name. Besides, the Ravager doesn't look so scary, and I'm still wondering why they need it. Don't they have huge catapults they could use against those tiny walls? It's not like they prepared a huge wolf's head battering ram named Grond, built for the very specific purpose of breaking the gates of Minas Tirith. Well, let's go back to Celebrimbor. He's figured out that he's stuck in some sort of perception distortion. There's a glitch in the Matrix. But this big reveal comes when he throws the hammer out the window. And all of a sudden, Annatar's illusion is broken, simply because of some outside noise has come in. But hold the phone. Celebrimbor literally opened this episode by sipping his elven coffee on the porch outside. If noise from outside breaks the illusion, then how was Celebrimbor fooled before? When he confronts Annatar, I love the almost imperceptible twitch in Annatar's face when he realizes he can't keep the sham up any longer. Again, Charlie Vickers is just doing yeoman's work here with this script and his character. He's doing an excellent job. And as it turns out that the mithril powder was just a deception, Annatar shows him the cut on his palm from which he must have squeezed his black goo so that it could go into the rings. But again, timing. How much time has passed between episodes? His hand looks fresh. How long has the siege been happening? It's still, like, bleeding. He didn't even bandage it or anything? I'm just really confused about the timing here. And Celebrimbor, after realizing that Annatar is Sauron, he just turns and leaves the workshop to go survey the damage outside? No confrontation at that moment? He basically just cries and runs away, which is what every male character in the show does when confronted with a challenge. From Durin to Celebrimbor to Elendil, they just cry. No other reactions. It's like this script was written by a handful of teenage girls who had never actually met a man before. Celebrimbor says that the Ravager is attacking the thinnest point of the wall. A few issues with this scene. How do the orcs know where the thinnest part of the wall is? They just happen to have secret knowledge? And why is there not even one single attack on the front gate over the bridge? And is this actually the thinnest part of the wall? We don't actually see that. Celebrimbor just says it. To me, it just looks like every other part of the wall. Why does this show insist on so much relying on weak dialogue rather than actually showing us these things? Oh, and by the way, do you notice that for this entire conversation where Celebrimbor is on the wall, the battle around them essentially disappears? Not one arrow flies across the screen. Not one elf even looks out over the wall. There's even a siege ladder leaning against the wall, and even though thousands of orcs are down below, not one even pops their head over the wall on the ladder that is literally right there. There is no inner consistency of reality here. And apparently Sauron can use the Force. But he uses the Force to throw Mordania off the wall, making it look like Celebrimbor did it. Okay, there's no real setup for that. But his powers are whatever the writers need them to be. But she survives falling off the wall, and while at least four or five elves stand there and just watch, three of them are actually archers with bows and arrows in their hand, but they just stand there and watch as an orc slowly walks over and takes a big swing, revealing his chest. Seems like a great opportunity for an arrow shot right there. And he just ends Mordania. I emphasize again, three elven archers are just standing on the wall watching, just 5 feet away. This is the easiest shot they could have taken. And yet not one single arrow is loosed in an effort to save Mordania? Did the writers just not even think about this? But then elven horns sound in the distance. Alright, I really love the golden clad warhorse. It's pretty awesome. That's a pretty good visual. The elven armor is really dorky though, and I think I've seen better cosplay at fan conventions. But what I actually do like is there's about 200 elven warriors on horseback. Emphasis again on elven. These are no mere mortal men from Rohan. These are the elves of the Second Age, strong and still young. Imagine what 200 Arondirs or 200 Legolesi? Just imagine what 200 of these warriors on horseback can do. I do appreciate that there's finally some scale for this show. A field wide with war horses and elves clad in armor is a formidable visual. But unclear why Elrond is in command here, even as Gil-galad is on the battlefield. I would have thought that Gil-galad would have led the charge. He's no stranger to battle and war. And besides, how did Elrond get there? Did he take the whole cavalry to Khazad-dûm? Or did they wait for his high school reunion to be done before they charged on Eregion? It doesn't really make sense. We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back. Every holiday season, we gather around the stories that matter. Stories that endure. And what better way to carry those stories with you than with a ring inspired by Tolkien's Legendarium? Manly Bands has created the official Lord of the Rings collection, each piece designed with the care and detail you'd expect from a world that has shaped our imaginations for generations. I wear the Aragorn ring. It reminds me daily of strength, hope, and timeless courage. To find your exclusive discount code for 25% off your Manly Band, visit ringspodcast.com and tap the gold bar at the top. This holiday, give something that lasts longer than a season. That's ringspodcast.com and tap the gold bar. But Adar has a secret ace to stop the charge. He might kill Galadriel. Notice the musical cues between Elrond and Galadriel, and there's a subtle visual that you might miss. Even though the charging cavalry halts, the ranks of orcs still take a step back in dismay. Nice touch, but even so, I really don't think that horses running at full gallop charge speed can stop that quickly. That doesn't seem believable to me. And besides that, why would they even stop for Galadriel? Number one, they don't even like her, and she's kind of been a pain in their butts this whole entire show from season one to season two. And number two, why not just attack the orc that's got the knife to her throat? The elf is literally right there. He's like at the tip of the spear. It's like, even just shoot an arrow and knock that orc down. Like, Galadriel, is she actually really in danger here? But we just have to believe it anyway, because we have to try diplomacy with the orcs before we battle, because, you know, that's how this show does. We can't just have an actual traditional good versus evil battle. We have to talk it out, attempt diplomacy. Okay, whatever, I'm getting off on the rails here, but why is it that Elrond is treating with Adar? Where is King Gil-galad? He's just hanging out? Where's even the rest of the army? They're just kind of standing there face to face with the orcs while Elrond goes into the tent with Adar? Where is Gil-galad? I don't even know. Why is he not speaking for the elves here? How does Adar even know Elrond? Adar again seems to have a lot of inside knowledge about what's happening inside of Eregion, claiming that Celebrimbor welcomed Annatar in. How does he know these things? We don't even know. He just knows these things. But we do need to pull over and examine some lore. Adar tells Elrond, quote, "You have the beauty of your foremother, Melian of the Valar." Okay, who is Melian and is she actually of the Valar? Not quite. Melian was of the class of spirits called the Maiar, who were essentially servants and helpers of the Valar, the powers of Middle-earth. So she is an immortal being. Other examples of the Maiar would be like Gandalf and Saruman and even Sauron. These are all spiritual beings of the Maiar. Melian married an elf king and their daughter was Luthien, the same Luthien who, with mortal man Beren, reclaimed one of the Silmarils from Morgoth's crown. Luthien is Elrond's grandmother, but here's something ironic that Rings of Power does not even pick up on. Out of the few elves in this tent treating with Adar, Elrond had zero interaction with Melian. But another elf actually invested several centuries learning wisdom and grace at the feet of Melian. And she's standing there in this tent with Adar, Galadriel. And yet we get no recognition on her face, not even a shot that Galadriel knew and loved Melian when she is mentioned. And it would have been so simple, so easy. They don't even need the rights to the Silmarillion. It would have just been gold for us who are deep fans, just to have one little shot. Adar mentions Melian's name, and Galadriel looks up. She has some recognition. She has some reverence on her face. But that is completely breezed over. It's not even acknowledged. Just goes to show how wildly misunderstood the lore actually is to these writers. Let's examine Adar's claims to Elrond. He will outmaneuver the elves, and his forces outfight the elves. Yeah, nobody's buying that at all. I mean, just on the screen, if you've only seen The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings, you know that Legolas is worth at least 40 elves. Legolas, like the Battle of Helm's Deep, he handles 42 orcs all on his own. We've all seen this before. That's precedent on screen before. Neither of these statements, that Adar's forces will outmaneuver the elves or that his forces will outfight the elves, they have no setup to them. There's no precedent for them in this show. We have no idea what the size of the opposing forces are, what their setup is, what the lay of the land is. We just have no idea. They haven't shown us anything. We just have to take what the characters say and visually piece it together for ourselves. But beyond that, both of these statements are incredibly inaccurate. So either Adar is bluffing and Elrond is a fool, or they actually believe this stuff, which is just not even believable for me. So let's bust these two myths. Number one, Adar says that they will outmaneuver the elves. Well, Elrond's forces are on horseback, and they have already just completed a flanking maneuver before Adar even pulled his sneaky trick of Galadriel in the cage. So no, elven warriors on horseback are not going to be outmaneuvered by sunburned orcs on foot. If Adar made the case that the muddy river bottom would be detrimental for horses, then sure, maybe I could buy that. But he doesn't even make that case, and neither do we actually see that that would be a problem. I doubt the rioters even consider that. Myth busted, because the elves have already outmaneuvered the orcs. We have no reason to believe that that would be reversed. Okay, claim number two, that Adar's forces would outfight Elrond's elves. We've seen in this show, just in Rings of Power alone, that one elf can usually take down about 20 orcs before they are even scratched. Just look at the elf to orc kill count ratio. It's not even close. Fine, so Elrond doesn't have that knowledge, but Galadriel does. She's even fought Adar's forces on the battlefield only weeks or months before, but she doesn't offer any advice here at all. So let's do the math ourselves. Let's say that Adar has 5,000 orcs, since he's claimed to have 5 legions. In Eregion, we've seen about 30 elf archers. 30 elves each can take on 20 orcs, that means 600 orcs are down. Now Elrond has shown up with at least 200 elves, and they are on horses, which gives them an even greater advantage. So let's spot them 50%, so one elven cavalry rider can dispatch 30 orcs. 200 times 30 means that Elrond's army can handle 6,000 orcs. So even then, Elrond's forces could easily outfight Adar's so-called 5 legions, as the combined elven forces can fight 6,600 orcs without even breaking a sweat. But wait, you say, Adar has a troll. Well, I see your troll, and I raise you one Arondir. Or one Galadriel. Either way, they can single-handedly bring down the troll. Maybe not Arondir, perhaps, and Galadriel is still in chains for now, but I think a few of the extra cavalry elves could have handled the troll. But this is completely lost on these characters and the scriptwriters, so Elrond just simply accepts Adar's terms, although he is able to cleverly plant some seeds of doubt in the orcs' minds as he does so. But this isn't the worst of the diplomacy conversation in Adar's tent. Elrond and Galadriel share a moment. We'll get to that right after this break. We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back. Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide. It is the greatest kiss of all time. Even Wesley and Buttercup's kiss would not have matched the passion and purity of this kiss. It's even so terrible to see that the orcs can't stand to look. This kiss between Elrond and Galadriel, it's just so stupid. It breaks all the lore. It has like 1,000% zero precedent in anything Tolkien wrote, and it is just plain insulting. At this point in the lore, Galadriel was married to Celeborn, and their daughter, Celebrian, was born sometime in the Second Age. Newsflash, Elrond marries Celebrian. So he's kissing his future mother-in-law here. Yikes. No thank you. Alright, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't actually know that yet, because apparently he hasn't met Celebrian yet. I don't even know. Where is Celeborn? Where is Celebrian? We have no idea. And I know what you're thinking. But he had to distract everybody and slip the pin into her hand so that she could escape. Sure. Absolutely. I can think of 3 or 4 other ways that he could have done that. Ways that would have shown more respect for Galadriel. Kiss her on the hand, for one, like you would show respect to a queen, and slip the pin in her hand as you do so. Maybe he could take her hands into his and touch the brows of their heads together, similar to other greetings that we've actually seen them already do. Each of those ways would have been consistent with their platonic friendship and treated Galadriel with an elegance and grace that she deserves. And he doesn't even pass the pin while they are kissing. He does it after the kiss. And there's an orc in the right of the frame that is clearly looking at them. How does he not see this? Instead, what we're given in this show is yet another male character who seemingly has the hots for Galadriel. Okay, fine, so Elrond didn't actually mean it, but come on. When every other male character in Galadriel's orbit is romantically attracted to her, Halbrand, Adar, even Isildur and Theo back in Season 1, and you have all of this beautiful romantic music and the lingering and the closing of the eyes, it's just rather pathetic that this is the best that the writers could come up with. Unless their whole entire goal is to insult the Lord of the Rings fanbase, then well done. You've accomplished your goal far better than anything else you've done with this show. Let's move on. It's cool that Elrond and his buddy are speaking Elvish among the orcs, but we have to remember that they are led by a dark elf. So maybe it's actually a stupid assumption that the orcs don't understand them. And then he gives it all away anyway, giving the key order in common tongue. Ride to them now. And then leaves his buddy in the middle of the orc camp? Like, what? I wouldn't trust my enemy that way. Okay, Prince Durin makes a rousing speech to the dwarves. It's actually a really good speech, if he were actually talking to warriors and not the common citizen dwarves as shown on screen, but it is incredibly rousing speech, if not pretty ironic that he's talking about loyalty as they're going to mutiny against their king, but in fact it is one of the best battle speeches Rings of Power has given us thus far. And let's go back to the battle. So we do actually see that the muddy river is a problem for the horses, so I take back some of my earlier comments. I still think the problem could have been foreshadowed or set up a little bit better. And besides that, it's like, when did the fighting resume? We just have Elrond walking out and he doesn't even go back to his command, like, he doesn't even go back to the horses, they don't charge again. They're just like randomly riding their horses through some trees. It's like, come on, dude, like, have a better strategic advantage than that. You gave up your strategic advantage before, it just doesn't make any sense. And the orcs are using the Ravager to tear off little pieces of the wall. And they actually call it THE Ravager. So this little contraption does have an actual name. How did Myrdania know the name of this little thing? And here's a stupid theory. She is actually Adar's spy inside the walls of Eregion. That sounds pretty dumb though. And Adar's a pretty twisted dude. I love you so much that I will send you into battle so that Sauron doesn't become your master. Dude, that's so messed up. Too bad. Will nobody love the orcs? Adar is just like two ends of some crazy spectrum. I love the orcs. I don't love the orcs. The orcs I just use as my tools. Oh, but I love them with all of my heart. Whatever's left of my heart. I don't even know what that means. It's just like, dude, bro, pick a side, man. Like, pick a side. Galadriel is escaping in disguise, but she witnesses orcs caring for their dead. This is not really a thing. In fact, there's several hints in what Tolkien actually wrote, from the Two Towers to Unfinished Tales and more, that orcs would have eaten their fallen after a confrontation. Yes, pretty nasty. But perhaps Adar is trying to change the nature of the orcs, giving them rituals and mourning for the dead. But still, he and this scene are entirely made-up inventions, brought to you by the writer's room of Rings of Power. In fact, when you zoom out, the orcs are the only people in the show that we are meant to sympathize with. We see orcs mourning their dead, and yet dozens and dozens or hundreds of immortal fair elves, the fairest of all creatures in Middle-earth, have died, and not one tear has been shed over them? Not one moment of mourning for the fallen elves? Elrond even gets angry only after his no-named horse is killed, not even when his elven friends fall in battle. Such a wild misunderstanding of Tolkien's lore, and I cannot help but feel like some level of political agenda is being pushed in this show. Which brings me back to the title of this episode, Doomed to Die. This line is clearly in reference to mortal men, that men die and their spirits leave this world. It comes from the ring verse printed in the Lord of the Rings book. Sure, the Nine Rings are made, but do we see any mortal men in this episode? Not a one. So they've taken a line from the ring verse about men, and they are applying it to this battle between orcs and elves. But elves are not doomed to die. They are immortal creatures. Even after death, their spirits return to Valinor. So this title is a wild misnomer for what actually happens in this episode. And perhaps it's just projection. Maybe Rings of Power is doomed to die, even though I wouldn't want that to be the case. Oh man, I feel so complicated about this. Anyway, Galadriel escapes and somehow is so careless that her blonde hair, hair that according to lore has caught and reflects the light of the two trees of Valinor, yet she can't even keep it all in the shawl? Dead giveaway for at least two of the 100 or so orcs for them to realize that she's not actually an orc. But Arondir saves Galadriel. How did he know that she was under the shawl? Even a few dozen orcs never noticed until the very last one or two. And awesome. The army of dwarves has assembled. Prince Durin has some wicked-looking armor, and they are ready to march to Eregion. But what happens next is, again, really stupid storytelling. Narvi comes. He's got a pretty nasty wound on his head. But he comes to say that the king is killing his own men. And Disa says that the army needs to be recalled. And then Narvi says that Khazad Dûm is going to fall by some unknown beast that might potentially be released. Why is Narvi saying all of this? It is so cheap and it falls so flat. Why not actually show us King Durin going so mad that he is fighting his own dwarves, and Prince Durin runs up to stop him? They struggle and the king throws down his son, but doesn't kill him, you know, for season 3's sake. Is it so hard to come up with a scene like that? Instead, we are simply told what happened, not shown. Rings of Power is a TV show, not a TV tale, just supposing it's supposed to be, that is. Back to an imprisoned Celebrimbor, as Annatar forces him to finish the rings. First off, he's like forcing him to finish the rings. Why does Celebrimbor not take the heroic choice and just say, kill me, kill as many as you want, but I am not going to finish this rings? That would have been really heroic. But no, he's just a broken old man. He's not even an elf anymore. He's just a broken old man. And he just does whatever Annatar says because he has a chain around his wrist. Annatar claims that Morgoth tortured him. I know of no tale that supports that claim, but Annatar slash Sauron is the great deceiver and probably only weaving a nasty lie. Annatar fully embraces a sort of antichrist type of a role, what with his spilling of blood to save Middle-earth. But again, it feels like an unearned moment and doesn't really have the emotional depth that it might possibly have. And in true narcissistic fashion, claims that Celebrimbor has brought this pain upon himself. Epic level victim blaming like I have never seen before. In a simple act of desperate valor, Celebrimbor attempts to destroy the Nine by tossing them to the Sideforge. Okay, that's actually a heroic choice, but, you know, maybe you didn't even need to get to this point. But they are hardly even warmed, just like when Frodo threw the One Ring into the fire at Bag End. A little bit more member berries there, as they say. And I just don't get it. Celebrimbor is the master smith and metalworker of this age, but he can't find a way to break the chains on his wrist? Why not put the chains in the press rather than his own finger? Oh, I know, because that would make too much sense. Plus, if he did that, then we couldn't get the wonderful squelching sound. Oh, and it's really cool echo that Celebrimbor now only has 9 fingers, just like Frodo ended his journey with only 9 fingers. Cool, right? So character inconsistency just to have a nice little bit of trivia connection. The story is such an afterthought here. Galadriel shows up. How did she get inside the city? And after all the girl power, Galadriel can defeat anyone and anything. I can't put my sword down because without it, what am I supposed to be? She just walks into the city without any fighting at all. There's like elves literally dying on the battlefield and she doesn't even go help them at all? If that is supposed to be character growth, then why not show a moment of decision where she actually turns away from the battle to pursue a higher purpose? Instead, the writers need her to have a surprise reveal. So without any setup or precedent, poof, there's now a magical dwarf tunnel behind the city. Oh, and by the way, you can get across the river to get to this magical dwarf tunnel without going over the bridge, and somehow this tunnel is still accessible when the river was still there before it was flooded, before it was, like, blocked up. So again, poof, magical crossing of the river, and poof, magical dwarf tunnel into the city. That is so convenient for the story. And Celebrimbor says, I built this city on rock and roll, man. This is my city. And suddenly all the elven warriors change allegiance yet again. Just because Annatar says stuff, they follow him. Now because Galadriel says stuff, they just follow her. She says, this is the greatest elven smith and the Lord of Eregion. And they're like, oh yeah, you know what? You're right. This is the greatest elven smith and the Lord of Eregion. And then they also say that Celebrimbor will not stand alone. Again, that touches on that theme from Lord of the Rings, but it just seems so hollow. Back to the outside battle. And I have a question. Where is Gil-galad? He nodded at Elrond and then hasn't been around for the negotiations, the fighting, and absolutely nothing. It's been at least a day since Elrond has shown up. Gil-galad, is he going to do hardly anything? And don't forget that he is the only person on this battlefield who has and claimed a ring of power. He just disappears. He's just gone for this whole entire battle. And this battlefield is just too choreographed. It doesn't seem real. And there's no real setup as Diversity Hire Asian Elf is shot by several arrows. Like, who is shooting the arrows? And why is she the only one that gets shot? Nobody else gets shot at this time? And all the helpless men look on as she looses a single arrow to turn the tide of the battle. Oh, and Arondir is on the wall now. Did he go through the secret magic poof tunnel with Galadriel? No setup, just cheap surprise reveals. Let's go back to Annatar, who uses the Force to get out of being surrounded by the Elven Police Squad. Not clear what his powers are, but force manipulation is one of his powers, at least for this episode, and if I were a member of the police squad, I don't think that I would calmly walk around Sauron the Deceiver with my sword still in its sheath, as I am literally one arm length away from him. I would certainly not do what these elven police do, and synchronize pulling out my sword with the other police elves, not because of personal safety in the face of danger, but because it looks cool for the camera. And after the whole squad skewers themselves from Sauron's force twitch, if I were the squad captain, I don't think I would walk up slowly and calmly to Sauron, just so he could kill me with a dance move. I would probably attack with some speed and force, but not this elf police squad captain. He just slowly wanders from Celebrimbor to Sauron in just the perfect way to die. And finally, Damrod the Troll has entered the battle. Where is Galadriel? She can take down this troll while everybody else watches. Arondir has some very helpful battle instructions. He must not reach the wall! I'm pretty sure the other elves were thinking, hey, it might be a good idea to let the troll reach the wall. Good thing Arondir was there to tell them otherwise. Damrod and the troll's musical theme is some pretty wicked heavy metal. Pretty heavy and totally fitting. And I'm not sure how strong the rope is, but Elrond's sword has been slicing through orc armor and bodies all day. But suddenly this little rope presents a huge challenge. If he were going for perfect timing so that the Ravager sucker punched the troll, he did a good job, but he was hacking at the rope for a good long while. And finally, Gil-galad enters the battle. What in the world has he been doing while thousands of orcs and a troll have wandered across the dry riverbed up to the very walls of the city? What a terrible king to hold back until he gets the glory kill. He says, a king's place is wherever the need is greatest. Well, yeah, then where in the heck have you been this whole episode? There have been so many times where the need was greatest and you were just not even there. Not even an explanation of where you might be. And in 10 seconds, we've gone from the blackest, darkest part of night to the rising of the sun. Time has no meaning in this show. And apparently neither does direction, as Elrond points to the rising sun saying, look to the north! For the record, the sun still rises in the east in Middle-earth. But alas, time and direction have no meaning. So the solitary soldier, wounded from arrows, can make it from the top of the hill, a mile away, down to have a conversation face-to-face with Elrond. Bet Adar and his orcs who started crossing the river hours ago are still crossing the river? Time and distance have no meaning. It makes this story so inconsistent. Oh, and another detail. Remember that orcs don't like to be in the sun? Yeah, it burns their skin. Hence, they need a cloud-covered land to dwell in. But apparently, the orcs have sun immunity if they're in battle. Yeah, that's no longer a problem here. And I just feel really sad for Elrond. He sits there in disbelief and shock, insisting that Durin and the dwarves will come. Maybe they will in the next episode, who knows, but he just kind of sits there while the battle continues. It's very unclear to me why the orcs insist on using their little chains to break down the wall. They've crushed all the resistance on the outside, and right next to them is a ladder that nobody is using. Seems a little pointless and wasteful to continue focusing on the wall. But they have a Ravager, so the screenwriters had to get some use out of that. Adar takes the ring, but doesn't kill Elrond, because, you know, no character consistency, and we need Elrond around for season 3. And the episode closes. But I see one glaring huge mistake that this episode, when combined with the previous episode, introduces. Why did Adar have to rage war to get to Sauron? Why did he not attempt to negotiate with the Elves of Eregion just like he did with both Galadriel and Elrond? He just assumed that he had to fight to get to him, but then he had the diplomacy talks with the other elves? Instead of the stupid, "Where is he?" message written on the soldier's chest in the last episode, why not send that soldier back alive with the actual message, "Hey, they will leave if we hand over Sauron," but that would have been too consistent, too logical. Plus, added to the drama of Celebrimbor trying to find out who Annatar actually is. But a totally blown and missed opportunity. Okay, let's score this episode. From 1 to 5 wizard staffs, let's give this episode a score. Story. So many plot holes and magical, convenient contrivances to be believable. I give it a 2. Characters. Are they consistent with their motivations and do their actions make sense in context of this world? In a word, no. I give characters a 1. Dialogue. Prince Durin's speech is actually pretty great, but some other things pull this down to a 3. Visuals. Some of the shots are really amazing, but still too much telling, not enough showing. 2. Music. Default to 4 here. The themes are good, and Dameron's music is pretty wicked, but nothing too spectacular on this front for this episode. Lore faithfulness. Elrond and Galadriel, orc rituals, Celebrimbor's fingers, and more. If you know of any Tolkien writing to justify any of these lore decisions, send it my way. But I'm giving this a 1. Overall score then is a 2.2. That's the second lowest scoring this season, second only to episode 6. But what do you think? Do you disagree with any of my scores here? Please send me a note because I would love to hear from you. Find me on Instagram or X, or send me a note using the contact form at ringspodcast.com. Thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.